Good morning. We're continuing our talks on inner realizations and correlating that with this book, The Mystical Eye. This is Chapter 5, The Two Ways of I. You know, of course, that you have a personal sense of I. That's the man that's 50, 60, 70. That's the woman that's 30, 40, 50, 60. That's the material sense of life. And that man does not come under the law of God, and anything at all can happen, because that man is a mental image, an image and thought. And thought is governed by two, by good and by evil. It's governed by the belief in two. And so that I, that me, well, since it was born, it's going to have to die. If it's well, it just might get sick. If it's wealthy, it'll probably be lacking. And if it's lacking, it might someday be affluent. If it's lonely, it might find a partner, a mate, a soulmate, a spouse. But that's all in the realm of thinking. Eve and Adam, they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And when they did that, they became a personal sense of self. When you're kicked out of the garden, you're kicked out of the kingdom, it really means that you're now living in this other I, this personal sense of I. And remember, Joel told me, personally, you haven't got one. And so every minute, every moment, every day goes by that you live in this personal sense of self, well, you're, what did Jesus call you and me? He said we were the walking dead. Let the dead bury the dead. Come and follow me. This is your true self. This is the other I. This is the I that was not made by thought, by good and evil. This is the I that came forth out of the Father. Before the world was, I am. Before Abraham, I am. This is that other I. And in meditation, sometimes you touch it. Sometimes you glimpse it. Sometimes you feel it. You feel the I that was never born. That I is immaculately conceived. It flows forth straight out of the Father with no help from anyone or anything. And so in this chapter, The Two Ways of I, Joel's going to touch on both of those I's. And he says, those of you who are on the spiritual path are living in two worlds, the material and the spiritual. It may be that some of you at the moment are experiencing very little of the spiritual world. But surely you do occasionally catch glimpses of it in or after a meditation. The experience of this expanded consciousness may come too when you have asked for help and you've been temporarily lifted out of yourself. And for a brief second have caught a glimpse of a consciousness beyond that of the natural man. The man who never enters heaven, never receives a blessing from God, and is never under the law of God. The consciousness of the natural man is just a branch of a tree that is cut off and is withering, gradually approaching 80 years. Never even suspecting that there is another realm. I looked up the word realm this morning, and the definition is this: a royal jurisdiction or domain, a region which is under the dominion of a king, a kingdom. And so Joel here is saying that as you live in this personal sense of self, that self never even suspects that there's another realm, another self. Someone reminded me this week that I said earlier that heaven is not a place. Heaven is your true identity. And it is. Heaven, this other realm, this kingdom, is your true identity. And it is governed by a royal presence. It's governed by the eye. The eye that God made. The eye that God is. God didn't make it and send it forth. God is it. I and the Father are one, says the one standing in I. And so when you find this other self, when you find this I, when you find this other realm, when you find this heaven, you have found the Father. You have found God, for I and God are one. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. Now, he says here, while you're in the consciousness of the natural man, something within turns you in the direction of a spiritual teaching. And if this teaching happens to be the infinite way, you are led not merely through some principles of metaphysics, but you are led into the practice of principles which must eventually result in meditation. And it is in meditation that this glimpse of the spiritual kingdom or spiritual realm or spiritual self or spiritual identity is given to you, because you are no longer seeking things. Which is why in the Kailua study series he pointed us in the direction of just standing still, reaching the place where that personal sense of self stops. And in that stillness, not seeking anything, we can catch a glimpse of this other I. The more often you seek it and attain it, the closer you are to that place where you are living more in the kingdom of God than in the world. Now, so you see, the two ways of I, the one way of I we know oh so well, that's the one that struggles here in the world. It's I against 4 billion. I have to carve out a place out of an unfriendly universe, and it's a constant battle. I'm constantly, that I am constantly trying to change the bad into the good. I think somehow that's going to make everything okay. And so I'm struggling to increase my income so that I don't have to worry about where food's going to come from or how I'm going to pay my mortgage. I'm constantly struggling to find the right mate. So maybe in this modern age I'm going to dating websites and I'm trying this one and that one and none of them are working out. I'm constantly trying to improve my health, and I'm exercising, I'm going to the gym, and I'm jogging, and I'm taking vitamins and supplements, and I'm doing everything I can. And just when I think I have it all together, I'm laid off from work. My significant other walks out of my life, and I can no longer afford supplements. So there I am again, starting all over. And that's the life of that I. Now let's suppose that you're very good at one of those things. Maybe you get into a career where you succeed beyond all expectations, and you make millions upon millions. You can afford anything. You have a host of fair-weather friends. We know that recently there was an actor that was a beloved of many people, and he just, with his $200 million, he went to his home and threw something around his neck and hung himself. And we have to ask, why? Because he didn't know this other eye. And he saw and felt the futility of life, even when you succeed in this realm of two-ness. Even when you succeed, it's not enough. There's an emptiness. There's a longing for something else, and maybe you don't even know what that is. I think Buddha had a good explanation or definition when he talked about getting off the wheel of life. Yes, the wheel that goes round and round and round and round and never goes anywhere. And this time you succeed and you're a multimillionaire. And next time you fail and you're a peasant. And the next time you're a prince, and the next time you're a slave, and the next time you're a queen, and the next time you're a servant. It goes round and round and round because it's non-existent. You might say instead of round and round, it goes back and forth between the opposites. Good, bad, good, bad. And it's not always severe. It can be very light. Fairly good, but slightly bad. Or fairly bad, but slightly good. That's the nature of the personal sense of I. So he says, sometimes people think that in coming into the spiritual life, they're going to leave the business world. This is rarely true, because they take upon their shoulders the instruction of students, healing work, and all the business affairs that are connected with the spiritual ministry. Yes, and we can see that recently in all the changes that we recently had to make in the website, Mystical Principles. We had been storing all the files on... Well, the first thing that happened was the website itself was being stored on the servers at GoDaddy. And they decided they didn't like the old pattern. They were going to have a new one. I could no longer have the website I had. I'd had to come use one of their templates. And, of course, they were going to charge a little more. So I moved, fortunately, about that same time I met someone that was running some servers and hosting websites, and we moved it over there. Well, then, the place where we had the files, which was Files Anywhere, began to go offline, and for no significant or apparent reason, they just were unavailable, and nobody could get any files for days. So we had to address that issue and move the files where hopefully they're more reliable to another server up in Canada, whereas they had been out in California, now they're up in Canada. Alright, so there are things that we have to do, and we had to come up with the money to do all that. And so those are business things. I know you're not lifted out. And when we gave the classes here in North Carolina, we had to... I had to pay up front. I didn't know how many people were going to come, but I still had to pay up front for the rooms to teach the classes, for the rooms to stay in, and for some other things. There was little things like coffee and flowers and... using the using the wireless, things like that. So you have to take care of those things. You're not lifted out of here and you just float into heaven. If you have that concept, it's not a right one. So, he says, even in spiritual activity, you find yourself in a measure involved in the business world, and some of it may be pleasant and some of it not so pleasant, which was how it was when they were unable to have the files anywhere up and running. People were writing me left and right. What's the matter? I can't get this herb talk. I can't get that talk. And they were very anxious about it. So I had to calm some people down and brush some feathers back and tell them it's going to be okay. In the meantime, we had to be writing files anywhere and saying, what's going on? And they're, well, we're making a lot of changes. We'll be up as soon as we can, you know. So, yeah, it's a question of balance is what I find. I find that I have to walk in this world, but I have to also have the conscious awareness of the other realm, which is here. It's almost like the two overlap at times. And then at other times, in a meditation, a deep meditation, this world and the personal sense of I completely disappears, and there's only that other realm. Joel says here, as a matter of fact, my own experience has been, the further I go, the less use I have of all this good that has come to me because I am so busy with the work. And so I know that this has not been given to me to give me leisure time, which has never come, but rather to make me a light that may illumine those still in darkness and those who are still seeking. Yes, that's something also that I realized. I came to see that this, whatever awareness I have, whatever glimpses I've had, whatever spiritual experience I've had, is not so I can sit around and rest and float on a sea of infinity. No, we're given the light, but we must share the light. I have found if I don't pour, then it doesn't flow. I have to pour out. I have to give it away in order for the flow to continue. All right, so this title, this heading here says, I can do nothing, but I within can do all things. Yes. Jesus said, I can of my own self do nothing. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. Now you must pause for a moment and ponder that, because as you read the New Testament, you will not have to read very far until you hear him say, I and my Father are one. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the light of the world. I am come that they might have life. Yes, I am the resurrection. All this will cause you to be very careful about the use of the word I, so that you watch what you are doing when you use that word. This is Jesus speaking from first the personal sense of I, which can do nothing. You know, if you've had any experience at all practicing these principles, you know you can't heal a headache. You can't heal a cough, you can't heal a backache. You know, you can't demonstrate money, you can't demonstrate income, you can't demonstrate outgo, you can't demonstrate supply. You know you can't demonstrate a companion or employment. You have to agree and admit, I can of my own self demonstrate nothing. And if you've reached that place where you are not trying to demonstrate things anymore, you've gone beyond metaphysics into this new realm where you catch a glimpse of I, then you know I am the way. I am the resurrection. I demonstrate. But what do I demonstrate? I demonstrate all that the Father has. What does the Father have? The Father has only spirit. God is a spirit. Then what can I demonstrate? Only the spiritual substance, the invisible incorporeality. I can demonstrate this other realm, governed by God, governed by love. People were children of God. I can demonstrate that. Then, because of omniscience, it appears as the form needed at this moment. So, I am the way. But that way is not something you can get your hands on and manipulate. It's something you can only stand back and bear witness. He says, the message of the infinite way is making clear that which has been lost to the church for, well, about almost 2,000 years. There is a human eye who can do nothing. And there is a divine eye within you through which you can do all things. You must know that there is an eye called Joel, or an eye called Bill, or an eye called Mary, or an eye called Barbara, and there is an eye called you. But neither you nor Joel has fully attained. Joel is likely to make mistakes. Joel might sometimes get angry, or very angry. Joel at times enjoys a good meal. Yes, I think Joel was very fond of pie, if I remember. But this is not the eye that is spiritual, not the eye that is the spiritual teacher. This is the part of my selfhood which is still in personal sense. And it is the only one, it is the one of which Jesus spoke when he said, I can of mine own self do nothing. Once you make the same acknowledgement, then you can say, but my selfhood, my real selfhood, is divine. Christ. My Savior is Christ. My healer is Christ. You will do your best to be led spiritually when you go to the polls to vote, but you will not put your dependence for freedom on whoever is elected. You will be living consciously in the awareness of this I within you. This is praying without ceasing, constantly realizing that I in the midst of you is mighty. I in the midst of you is your bread, your meat, your wine, and water. All right, so this is very important. Don't want you to miss it. I don't want to miss it. This is living a double life, isn't it? Even while you go to the voting booth with your card in hand, ready to vote for whoever you think is going to be the best president, if you're standing in this other eye, this invisible incorporeal eye in the midst of you, you will know that you're not dependent on that president for your harmony. You're dependent on the I. And so he says, your job then, even while you're voting or working or playing or sleeping, is to live consciously in the awareness of this I within you. This is praying without ceasing. Yes, I used to wonder. I even asked Herb. I called Herb one time and asked him about it. Herb Fitch. I called him in Hawaii and I said, Herb, I don't understand. How do you pray without ceasing? Because I'm in a particular job where I have to concentrate on the work at hand, or I'll make a mistake. Because what I was doing was I was using a pair of calipers and I had to measure something to within a thousandth or two thousandths of an inch. Very precise work. And how can I pray at the same time? Because when I'm praying, my mind is somewhere else and I'll mess up on the job. I don't understand. And you know what? I don't even remember what he said. But the feeling I came away with, I remember that. The feeling I came away with was, if I will concentrate on praying without ceasing, the work will take care of itself. But later I found this. I found what he has here. When you are consciously aware of this I within you, then you're praying without ceasing. So I found out, yes, I can do that. I could be in the middle of a movie theater and consciously aware of the presence at the same time I'm enjoying the movie. I could be in the middle of my bed in the middle of the night, sleeping, and yet consciously aware of this presence. It's happened several times. I could be even in the middle of passion and discover that this presence was also there. That was an interesting experience. And so, of course, I could be on the job concentrating on this, making these parts within a thousandth of an inch, and at the same time, an area of my consciousness consciously aware of the presence of this I, this other realm. Here it is right here, right now, as I'm talking to you. I'm feeling that other realm, that other presence, and it's nodding, yes, this is the truth. You can be doing anything and be consciously aware of this other realm, this other presence, this other I. So that's praying without ceasing. Praying has nothing to do with the mental activity. Praying is conscious awareness. Mental activity will never demonstrate anything except two-ness. Conscious awareness always flows out and appears as form. You see that? It's beautiful. Beautiful. So he says, we skim over those passages in the Bible as if they were not important. Of course, they are not meant to be taken literally, but be assured, Jesus meant what he said, because the division is taking place, and it is taking place this very moment that you begin to rely on the I within you, and not on your parents, children, aunts, uncles, or cousins, and not on your president. Let's back up here and go to the former paragraph. All this leads us to a very difficult place in our journey. Now, if you thought this was all going to be rose bed, rose garden, you were mistaken. He says, all of this, what? All of what? All of coming to that place where you are taking care of your responsibilities, but you're resting back in the conscious awareness of the living I within you at the same time. That, all of that leads to a very difficult place in our journey. We are so accustomed to read and hear the beautiful biblical promises of a perfect heaven that we sometimes forget there are also some other biblical promises which we may have overlooked. Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. I come not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And so he says, we skim over those passages as if they were not important or not intended to be taken seriously. Of course they are meant to be taken. They are not meant to be taken literally, but be assured, Jesus meant what he said, because the division is taking place. Okay, what division? The very moment that you begin to rely on the I within you and not on your parents, children, aunts, uncles, or cousins, and not on the president, not on economics, a division has occurred right there. You are being separated from your dependence on persons. As long as there are two states of consciousness, or two selves, the material I and the spiritual I, you will find there will be a division or separation from those of your relatives who prefer to remain in a material consciousness or a material sense of self. even if they are your own children or parents. You may not move out of their home or put them out of your home, but there will be a wall between you. A wall that means a lack of understanding. You will really find that your companionship, your wholeness and oneness will be with those of your spiritual household rather than your own family. Such experiences often take people from the spiritual path. As the Master said, few there be that find it. Many are called, but few are chosen. Yes, we know that experience, and we've had people on our Mystical Principles group that have stated how painful this can be when all family members and all friends are lifted. There's a division. It's not that you are better than they. It's not that you are more advanced than they. It's not that at all. It's that you know there's this other realm. You've touched it or are touching it. And you're talking with them or listening to them. You're experiencing this other realm while they go on and on and on about the problems of a personal sense of self, which you know will never be answered. Because the answer is to renounce that personal sense of self, to step out of it, even while you're here. And so a wall comes between you. You can't talk of it. In the beginning, we all make the mistake. We're so excited about a spiritual path that we perhaps go to them and talk to them about it till they get tired of hearing about it. That also creates a wall. But later, when we've come to some form of maturity where we know that we're not here to invite the whole world, we know that we're here only to practice these principles, and then those that are attracted will find us. Then we stand in this conscious awareness, and we don't have a lot in common with those family members anymore. I remember when I first found this path, it was in 1972, I guess. I told my friends, well, at the time we all had long hair, and we were all listening to Buffalo Springfield and smoking pot and all that, those of us that didn't go to Vietnam, and those of us that did go to Vietnam that survived. And I told all those friends, don't come by the house if you're taking any drugs, because I'm stopping. I've found a spiritual way of life, and I'm trying to live it. And I knew I had friends and acquaintances, probably 30 or more. That was in September of 1972, and so it's been 44 years, and I'm here to tell you, not one of those friends ever came by after that. Except those, and there was only two or three, that also found a spiritual way of life. Not one. And so you see, they weren't really friends, were they? They were just people also living in a personal sense of self, trying to escape. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that way of living. I'm saying that that is an artificial form of escape. The real escape is stepping out of a personal sense of self and into an impersonal I, into this other realm. That's the real escape, and it doesn't require any drugs. You can do it without drugs. You can do it just with meditation. All right, so the point that I'm making is it was painful. I found myself alone and lonely part of the time, especially in the beginning. I remember when this experience happened to me, it was very painful. I felt alone. But I did have one person, and that was my spiritual teacher, the person that introduced me, that gave me the first copy of The Art of Meditation. He was my spiritual teacher, and his name was Don. And we lived in California, and I went over to his house. I talked to him about this. I remember he told me, I said to him, "What do I do, Don?" I said, I can see people living in that personal sense of self, and it's kind of ugly, but I don't want to judge them. And I said, but I also know this other I. I've experienced it. And I can't tell anybody about it. What do I do? He said two things. I remember. The first thing was, he said, we never turn our back on other people. Someday, somewhere, one of them might say, "What have you got? How do I get it?" And we have to be ready. And the other thing he said was, we are so fortunate now. He said, back in the times, in the time of Jesus, or even before that, you might live your whole life and only meet one other person that is walking the spiritual path, that has an awareness. You might go your whole lifetime and only meet one. He said, today, there are enough people on earth doing this that you can meet several. And so he said, we actually have it a lot better than the people then. Well, it didn't do much for my feeling that loneliness at the time. But I guess I accepted it, and I continued on the path. Now, Joel says here, if I can find it again, he says, such experiences, that is, this division between you and other people, often take people from the spiritual path. It takes them away from the spiritual path, because few there be that find it, and many are called, but few are chosen. So this loneliness can take you from the spiritual path. I tried it. I told you that last week, or the week before, or the week before. When I decided I was just going to be normal. And that happens. It takes people from the spiritual path. They decide they don't want this division. So they fall asleep again. I think Paul even talks about those that have fallen asleep again. Doesn't he? In the Bible there somewhere? Yes. I think that's him talking about people that have fallen back to sleep. And that's what we do. We say, I can't deal with this. I don't want to be all alone. So, I'm going to forget about it for a season. I'm going to just be normal. I'm going back into being a human being. Now I have friends again. I'm going to parties. I'm going to social events. It's so nice. I have a lover. There's nothing wrong with having a lover and going to social events if you have also this conscious awareness. But if you throw it out the window so that you can have these other things and you don't feel so lonely, and then you just think of this as, well, that was an interesting philosophy, and it's probably most of it's true, but I can't attain it in this life, so I'll just go on the way I am. I'm sure there's a God and he'll look after me. Well, some people stay there and they never come back. They fall back asleep and never reawaken. And I would have been one, except something within me would not let me stay asleep. Remember, in the middle of the night, 4 a.m, it came looking for me. That was the eye of myself. That was the eye of my being, I should say. That one came and shook me up and said, no. Oh, no, you're not quitting. When was that? That was 81. And I have not turned back since, but you can see that 9 years after my first spiritual experience, when I talked to Don about being lonely, 9 years later, I decided I just wanted to be normal. I didn't want any more spiritual experiences. I didn't want to be lonely. Don had passed on, and there was no one to talk to. I couldn't heal my wife. I was mad at God. Well, I'll show him. I'll have nothing more to do with him. Except God said, "Good morning. Wake up." And he meant it in more ways than one. And so I was not permitted to fall back asleep. But here Joel says, such experiences often take people from the spiritual path. And so if you can't, if you have a copy of A Parenthesis in Eternity, read that chapter on initiation. It's awesome. It may not help you now if you're not going through the initiation, but later you'll remember. And a part of it says that one of the things that can drive us from the path is that loneliness. All right, so he says here in this chapter, in the beginning, following spiritual principles was a way to achieve better health, better supply, better companionship. And now, in this initiation, to your surprise or dismay, you're faced with the fact that just the opposite may take place. You may lose some of your companions and some of your friendships. In the same way, in seeking health, sometimes when you are hoping to get rid of one undesirable condition, you may discover now you have three or four others along with that one. Yes, these are all places on the spiritual path that we don't want to look at. He said, these others have been latent in your body or mind, and now, walking this way stirs them up. All of a sudden you discover ailments you never knew you had. Well, I can attest to that. At first you may think that your spiritual study has brought this on. No, your spiritual study did not bring it on. But it did bring to the surface whatever was latent in the mind or the body, and the right attitude is to be grateful. Otherwise, it would lie dormant. It would lie there until it got ready to strike, whereas now at least it has come to the surface, and through your study and work you will have the opportunity to make a transition from a material sense of health to the spiritual consciousness of wholeness. That's a good place to stop and look at something. When we speak of the two ways of I, the entire spiritual path is moving out of the one way of I into the other way of I. Moving out of the letter, which is the mind, which is a personal sense of I, into the spirit, which is the invisible, incorporeal, eternal I. We're moving from one to the other. And what does Joel say in the wisdoms of that book, The Infinite Way? I die hard. Yes. Yes, that personal sense of I doesn't want to move out of the driver's seat. That, what did Freud call it? The id? That little ego? It was manufactured. You built it. Or the mind built it. It's not even a person. As Joel says, you haven't got one. Oh, but wait. No, you haven't got one. Yeah, but nope, you haven't got one. So, we are moving out of a personal sense of anything. If you have a personal sense of health, well, you're going to lose it. If you have a personal sense of wealth, you're going to lose it. A personal sense of friends, you're going to lose them. Nope. You have to trade that in. You drop that. You release that. You let go of that in order to come into the impersonal all good of the Father. So he says you're making a transition from a personal sense of health to a spiritual consciousness of wholeness. That's quite a difference. He says that in the wisdoms quite a bit, doesn't he? I don't want a personal sense of health. God is the health of my countenance. I don't want a personal sense of supply. All that the Father has, I have. I don't want a personal sense of life. All that the Father is, I am. You see? And so we're busy making a transition within ourself. We are being transformed by having a new awareness. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. We're being transformed. We are transitioning from a personal sense of I, a material sense of I, into an invisible incorporeal I and a spiritual sense of I. And while we're doing that, we're trying to maintain these relationships out here that are entirely material, entirely personal. And it's sometimes it tears us to pieces until we can learn this. Oh, that's where I started. It's a question of balance. We have to learn to walk in this world, but have these glimpses of the other realm, and sometimes stand or sit, play or work in the other realm while we're walking in this one. We're living in two worlds, or we're living in the two ways of I. So he says, you will discover there does come an end to all material good, whether of the body or the purse. Therefore, in trying to avoid making the transition to spiritual wholeness and completeness, you will know that you have merely postponed the ills of the flesh or of the purse. So, what is he saying? When I turned back to the world and I chose consciously, I wanted to fall back asleep. That's so funny to me now. What a crazy guy. Anyway, when I chose, I wanted to consciously fall back asleep. I couldn't make it. But some people choose to do it, and they make it quite fine. They fall back asleep, and then for the rest of this life, they no longer catch these glimpses. They live out a material sense of self. So he's saying, if you turn back and you avoid making the transition, all you're doing is postponing the ills of the flesh or the purse, because that's the nature of the opposites. It's going to happen. So he says, eventually you come to that place where, through spiritual consciousness, you rise above the idea of good health, good supply, and good companionship. That's so hard to explain to someone that's new on the path. You're going to reach the place where you no longer seek good health, good supply, or good companionship. But it's true. And so he says, as you live in this consciousness, and as you stop rejoicing in physical health or material wealth or human happiness, but always turn within and remember that all of this is the outer manifestation of that inner grace or inner invisible I, then you are making the transition to a health which is not of the body, but of the soul, to a supply that is not money, but is the source of the soul, has the source of the soul. The only way this can be accomplished is by the realization that I, the bread of life, is the source of spiritual harmony, appearing outwardly as human good. It appears as human good, but this is different. This is different from demonstrating supply. This is not a matter of standing in a personal sense of self and trying to practice these principles. God is my supply, God is my supply, God is my supply, so that my income doubles. I'm still a person, but now I have a doubled income. That's no closer to spiritual freedom. What of this other I? What happens when I stop trying to demonstrate things and I move into simply trying to glimpse or rest back in or bear witness to this invisible I? Ah, then I appears as my supply. That's on a whole new level. It may also be doubled income. But the thing about it is, I won't have to demonstrate it next week or next year. Once I have the consciousness that I is my supply, appearing as all form as I need it, I don't have to demonstrate anything. I just have to rest in that I, and it appears as I need it, where I need it, when I need it. It's a permanent dispensation. It is a wellspring of I, springing up into life everlasting. So Joel says, during this transitional period, you are continuously going within for the remembrance of this indwelling I, this Christ, this self. We call that practicing the present. Yes, that's praying without ceasing. You're going within continuously. You throw out all these demonstrations. There's no more to make. You have one demonstration. The remembrance of the indwelling I, the conscious awareness of the indwelling I. And so on the next page he says, in meditation, you contemplate the spiritual activity and being that is within yourself. You contemplate that I. Contemplating always the infinite invisible of your being, that Christhood of your being, that divine I. Such a contemplation brings a dropping away of love, hate, and fear of the external world. You say, do you stop loving it? And Joel says, unduly loving it, yes. And perhaps you stop loving it in the wrong way and begin to love it in the right way. Uh-huh. That's hard, too. That's hard. That can be painful, too, to suddenly realize, oh, my goodness, this person I thought I was in love with isn't there. This again is the invisible appearing as companionship. And so when you focus your love on the invisible appearing as that, then you're loving in the right way. And the person is lifted up because you're beholding the invisible of them. But in order to do that, you have to let go of a personal love. That can be very, very, very difficult. That's worth a whole talk. When an individual begins to realize that this invisible presence within himself is really the soul of husband, wife, child, friend, and neighbor, then they begin to perceive that same soul in him or her, and the love takes on an entirely different nature. The animal part of it goes and joy comes in. Or in my experience, the dependency goes and the freedom of I comes in. So he says, so it is then that in these two worlds there is always a you communing with the invisible presence. This Jesus called Father and Paul called Christ. Actually, it is the Spirit in you. The same Spirit that raised up Christ from the dead shall also quicken your mortal bodies. Yes, when? When you have the conscious awareness of it. So he says, the same Spirit that raised up Jesus Christ from the dead is within you. Now listen to this line. You do not get it. You acknowledge it. Recognize it and let it flow. It is your dwelling in the consciousness or the conscious awareness of its presence. You're acknowledging its presence within you. In your communing, in your silent moments with it, that brings it more and more into manifestation. So more and more it boils down to making a transition from knowing any truth to bearing witness to I, to it, to this I flowing out of another realm. There are those who through this communion eventually attain the ultimate experience, which is conscious union with God or with I, and who rise above their manhood and womanhood into their godhood. As with the Master, it is not, however, a continuous experience that goes on for the rest of one's life. It is an intermittent one, here today, gone tomorrow, and perhaps back the day after that. All right, so there he says that the experience is not a continuous one. No, you can't just leap off into the infinite or step into the deep and stay there. I think if you did that, that may be a danger to your sanity. In fact, they have in India what they call men and women who are God intoxicated. They tried to make the leap all at once, and they became so intoxicated with the presence of God that they lost touch with the world. You can see them on the side of the road, eyes transfixed and staring into the invisible. Those are they call them musts, MASTS. You see them, they have a cigarette in their fingers, and the cigarette burns all the way down to their fingers, and they don't even notice. Those are the God intoxicated. And so if you tried to leap off all at once, I think that may be the result. Fortunately, for those of us following the infinite way, we come into it gradually, so that, again, here's that word, that balance takes place, where we are eventually able to walk in this world and be consciously aware of the invisible kingdom. We're able to stand in the kingdom and walk in this world at the same time. We're able to stand up and sit down at the same time. Now, in my journal in October of 2002, I wrote this. The consciousness or the conscious awareness of the presence of God is not dependent on what you know or don't know. The consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on what you believe or don't believe. The consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on your meditation or your prayer. The consciousness of the presence of God is not even dependent on whether you are alive or dead. Lazarus was good and dead, and yet conscious awareness of the presence of God functioned. The girl was dead and lying in her bed, and yet the consciousness of the presence of God awakened her. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I, this invisible I, will raise it up. I, the invisible I, have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to pick it up again. The consciousness of the presence of God is what I am. And so here we see that the consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on a material sense of I, is it? It can function wherever the invisible I chooses to function. It can lay down a material sense of I and pick it up again. And we're all walking to that place where we stand in the I and watch it function. Then we can say, I live yet not I, but invisible I, Christ liveth. Our meditations for one another are for the purpose of lifting the student up out of his manhood and womanhood into that I. It is in your Christhood that you can command the blind to open their eyes. This you cannot do in your humanhood, because nothing happens. Yes, you can't do that in a material sense of I. You can only do that from that invisible I. Most healing work actually takes place when the practitioner, through deep meditation, has lifted himself out of his personal sense of I into the divine I, or into Christhood. The more years a person works as a practitioner and spiritual teacher, the more hours of the day or the night he is in his Christhood, or in that invisible I, and therefore the fewer specific treatments he has to give. Hence we hear Joel saying, you know, sometimes I'm out watering the garden and all I have to do is smile. And the smile, in that smile I step into this impersonal invisible I and the air melts. In meditation, the personal I, which is Joel, or the personal I of any practitioner, must cease to function, yes. And here we have it again, a complete circle. We discover that it is only when a personal sense of I stops It's not functioning at all. That's the silence. You want to know what the silence is in which God announces itself? Here it is right here. In meditation, the personal I of any practitioner must cease to function. It stops. Therefore, when I meditate for you, he says, or with you, I do not permit you to enter my mind. I do not project myself into your mind. What I do is close my eyes, climb right into that inner I-ness. I want to commune and be one with this I that I am. And with a listening ear and my attention centered on the infinite invisible, I am still out here. Then the Spirit of God is loosed, and because a person has brought himself to my consciousness, he receives the fruitage. You see that? Now it's been an hour. We're going to run over just a little, so let's continue. We're almost done here, almost complete. So let us see how it operates, he says. There may be a person who is physically ill, and because of my retiring within into I-ness, that stillness, my being still and knowing the I, that is, having the glimpse of it, the conscious awareness of I, and letting that I be God, this person can receive a healing. But another can receive a moral healing, or another a financial healing, and yet another employment, or a healing of human relationships. And I know nothing about this at all. Yes. How could he? He stepped out of a personal sense of self, and he's let go of any personal sense of self out there. Now he's standing in the invisible infinite eye, the eye that is forever. And in that silence, in that absence of a personal sense of self, it has ceased to function, it has stopped. There's a vacuum. Into that vacuum, after we've practiced this over and over, into the vacuum flows the impersonal I. Then it takes form and appears as a healing. If you recognize the I as God when you turn to a practitioner, you cannot help being benefited. And so, to finish, in one way or another, we all lose the sense of attachment that has made us proud to belong to this family or that family. We lose it all in proportion to the realization of that word I, because the I of me is the I of you. If there is only one Father in heaven, and you and I are brothers and sisters, then the sooner we awaken to this and begin to act like it, the sooner we bring about our own freedom of those who come within range of our consciousness, and the freedom of those who come within range of our consciousness. Through the realization of the infinite invisible within you, you attain your freedom from this world. Now, you will not lose your love for parents or children. It will be on a different plane. You will not be a slave to it. You will not hold them in bondage. And then, too, you will probably contribute more money for benevolence and charity in the world, and yet have less sympathy and pity than ever before, because even while you are helping your fellow man on their level of consciousness, you will realize he does not have to be poor or enslaved. Anyone who awakens to the nature of I as true identity must become free. And so if you really want to be a blessing to this world, to your family, and to your neighbor or students, do not allow human thinking to enter your mind. And there you go. That's all you have to do. I've given you the secret of life. Says Joel, God is not with mortals. Take it from there. Or, stop letting human thinking enter your mind. Be still and know I, in the midst of you, am God, and then let I do the work. All right? Then the message of the help that your friend, relative, patient, or student gets will be directly from God and not from you. It will be the Spirit itself bearing witness with your spirit, and there will be harmony and peace. And so we see in this two ways of I, we see that there is a personal sense of self which wants to live and be and do and is always trying to change the bad into the good. And that's the one sense of I. And that's the I that must die. And you must die to it. But in the process of dying to it, you have to give away some of these things that perhaps you don't like giving away. Some of these attachments to personal senses of self. But if you are fortunate, as I was fortunate, to make such a contact that this inner I would not let me stand still and fall back asleep, and if you are able to walk even though it's painful and continue to take the steps forward and continue the transition from a personal sense of self to this inner I, then you will discover, you will be told, as Joel told me, you haven't got one. And then perhaps, maybe, you will find, at last I've found how to live. And that is not as I, a person, but as a witness of I functioning right here, right now. Flowing forth from a kingdom, another realm, appearing here as whatever is needed in this moment, be that supply, companionship, be that love, be that life. This I within flows forth and appears as fulfillment of every single need, even before I am aware of the need. This I is forming itself as fulfillment. And it's beautiful. It's the most fantastic, fabulous way to live. And I wish it for all of you. Don't be afraid. You're never given more than this inner I can handle for you. And so stand aside and let it handle and absorb whatever pain you feel. Let this inner I be everything to you. It's okay in November to go vote for whoever you feel would make the best president. But while you're voting, stand in this I and let it guide your hand where to put your check mark, or where to fill in, or poke out a chat, or whatever it is in your part of the world. And then don't depend on this new government, this new person. Depend on the I within you for your sustenance, for your life, your health, your companionship, and it will form itself in ways beyond your imagination, in ways you never dreamed of. It will form itself in such a beautiful way that you will, well, sometimes you can barely stand it. It's so beautiful. Then is when you will have to search around and ask and find the way that you can allow this invisible eye to express itself and begin to pour. You will find it's too much to stand. You have to pour out now. You have to share, give, love, do. And you will bear witness as Christ liveth. Okay, so another message is complete. I hope you are making this transition. I hope you are walking through this period of initiation. And I'm here if you have any questions. Thank you. God bless.